Hello and welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. Today we have a particularly important podcast discussion addressing child ID fraud, an emergent and malignant form of fraud, especially considering its victims have not yet reached adolescence. Financial institutions in particular should note this topic. We're joined today by two experts on child identity fraud to unpack the insights of Javelin Strategy and Research's latest publicly available report on the topic. Tracy Kitten is Javelin Strategy and Research's Director of Fraud and Security, and she's joined by Ben Halpert, the founder of Savvy Cyber Kids, an organization devoted to combating child ID fraud. Together, they unpack the data, detail the landscape, and offer recommendations for how financial institutions and consumers can combat and avoid child ID fraud. Without further ado, let's take it to the show. So Tracy, in 2021, nearly $1 billion was lost to child ID fraud. One in 50 children was affected by ID fraud in the past year. One in 45 minors' personal information was exposed via data breach in the past year. Why aren't we seeing more regulations surrounding protections for children from identity theft?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think I'll hand that one off to Ben, who has a lot more background and has done a lot more research into regulation and why we don't see more of it. But, you know, I would just say here to financial institutions who obviously are opposed to more regulation and for good reason, because financial institutions are also trying to run a business, but they also have to comply with a lot of regulations that are related to privacy as it is. And so the security at a financial institution is obviously much more superior than you would see in many other industries, including healthcare, which healthcare is coming along quite a bit, but financial institutions are kind of the cornerstone of security. And I think the message here for financial institutions is that they need to get ahead of this. They need to let parents know that they are there as a resource and that their children's information and identities are strongly protected within the institution itself, but also provide some education to consumers about what they can do to help protect their children from identity fraud. So even if there's an account that's compromised outside the financial institution, we are really recommending to our financial institution clients here at Javelin that they just get ahead of this, right? And just be a resource of education for consumers who have children who have fallen victim to identity theft and then subsequent fraud. But then I'll hand it over to you, right? Because you have looked a lot at the regulatory environment and have some interesting takes on why we don't see more regulation.
Tracy, thanks so much. From a regulatory perspective, you know, no matter the subject area, regulatory action always follows decades after we actually need some assistance from our regulators and legislators. And child identity theft is no different. Frankly, identity theft for adults has been a concern for much longer as well. And I'm glad that we're now talking about child identity theft, because from an adult's perspective, you know, we need to actually educate our children's parents about what identity theft really is, why it's important that we actually take some action to monitor or freeze our credit accounts so that we don't become, as adults, victims of identity theft or identity fraud. And we need to do the same thing for kids. From a child's perspective, though, it's actually much harder today to put a credit freeze, as an example, on a child's account. So as an adult, you can go to TransUnion, Equifax, Experian, you can go to the websites. You can find in the website, typically somewhere buried, because the credit bureaus don't want to actually have people put freezes on their credit profile for potential impact for revenue for the business. But it is there. And thanks to regulations for adults, we're now able to do that for free, whereas a decade or so ago, it was a fee to do it. And so from a child's perspective, a parent actually can't freeze their child's credit online. What they have to do is they have to take a piece of paper and they have to write a letter that has all the child's information. And then along with that letter, you have to send proof that you are actually a guardian or a parent of that child in the mail. And then the freeze will be put for a child on their credit profile. So it really starts with educating the parents about what the issue is for them and educating the parents about what the issue is for children.
Yeah, this is a great point, Ben. And it kind of ties in with what I was saying earlier about financial institutions kind of playing this role of leader in the space and educating consumers. I mean, you make a great point. They don't make it easy to have to fill something out and mail it in and not have the ability to do this online is really quite ridiculous in this day and age. And the other thing that I just wanted to add to that is that you have to have the child's birth certificate. I mean, how readily accessible is a child's birth certificate. I know for my son, that got filed away in a filing cabinet as soon as we got home from the hospital. So it would take me a while to find that. And so again, it's something that is not easy. And really, we should be doing whatever we can to make this, you know, a simpler task for parents.
Yep.
So Tracy, social media poses like an increasing risk to children and minors. 89% of U.S. households have children active on social media. 54% of parents admit they do not monitor their child's online activity. 18% of children active on social media had their personal identification information breached. What technical controls can parents and educators and guardians put in place, if any, that really work?
Yeah, this is a great point, Ryan, because we really see that there are some technical controls that are out there, right? We also see that there are some social media channels, such as YouTube for Kids, that is promoted as being more secure. But the honest truth about it right now is that education is really the only safeguard that we can rely on. Controls are easily bypassed. Children, if they have a social media account, they can post what they want. They can accept friend requests from individuals they want, regardless of the controls that parents put in place. I mean, unless you are looking over your shoulder 24/7 or anytime they're online, it's really difficult to control. Now, one of the things that we have found in our research is that children who have restricted or monitored access to the internet are much more likely to be safe and less likely to have their personally identifiable information or PII breached. But education is a big piece of this, right? Because we want children to learn safe online behaviors early so that they carry those behaviors on into adulthood. And Ben, this is something that you've been focused on for quite some time. In fact, I'm just really quite enamored to know that you've been looking at this space for more than two decades, right? Before many of us were really even thinking about safe online behaviors for kids.
Yeah, appreciate that. And so what our focus is at Savvy Cyber Kids is to educate and empower youth to make appropriate decisions when they're online. And we do that through the digital parenting guides we have, the digital grandparenting guides we have, digital parenting guides for gaming, and different conversation starters around all the topics that are important in a kid's life when they use their tech. And so if we can educate the parents that you need to talk to your kids about these specific topics, you need to talk to your kids about what security is, what privacy is, what type of information it is okay to share with strangers, the type of information that it is not okay to share with strangers. Really important conversations to have, and we enable that by providing, you know, constant information to parents on an ongoing basis on social media and from our website. And something else that we developed after I founded the nonprofit, after doing this work for several years focusing on educating parents, is I realized we needed to do more for our kids. And so I created a children's picture book series called The Savvy Cyber Kids at Home. And in this series, which by the way, you read to your kids starting at 3 years old. And as you're reading this to your kids, they're learning. But they're having fun because, you know, the books use superheroes. The kids in the books actually create superhero identities. And those are the identities that they use when they go online. So if anyone ever asks, what's your name? Where do you live? What's your parents' job? They know what the answer is. And they're learning in a fun way. They don't even know they're learning. And so getting the parents involved in raising kids to make those decisions, just like that statistic you gave us, Tracy, is really so important to help reduce the impact of child identity theft.
Yeah, that's great. And I just have to say, Ben, we just took a vacation. My son turned 4 in February and I ordered one of the books. And so we read that on the plane. So we really did enjoy the superhero, the superhero angle. And I think it's just so shocking to think that at 3 years old is when we should start educating our kids. And there's also a piece to this, too, that goes to educating parents, as you mentioned, Ben, because parents oftentimes share too much about their children, right? I mean, posting things about where your kids go to school, when you take vacations, as I mentioned, I just recently took a vacation. Posting all of that on my own social media account could put my child at risk. Of course, working in this space, I know I don't post anything until after I'm already home. But even some of the information that we share with our doctor's offices or when we enroll a child in daycare or school, right, is sometimes information that we should challenge and not just automatically provide.
Yeah, and when it comes to the challenge piece, this is an interesting aspect to think about, that whenever you sign up for an account, the typical reflex for these companies, these gaming companies and social media companies, is to ask for a birthday. And so, you know, if you step back for a second and think about, do they actually need my actual birthday, or are they just trying to comply with a law? And they're actually doing it to the letter of the law. And the letter of the law, it would be the COPPA law. And in that law, it says you can't market to kids under 13. And so, you know, if you're filling this out, you should talk to your kids about what a white lie is. You know, when it's okay to tell maybe not the absolute truth, but, you know, there's no reason why we should be giving our actual birthdays. There's no reason why our 14-year-old needs to give the actual birthday that can be used against them in identity theft or identity fraud situation future in their life just to do something like play a game.
So, Tracy, children under the age of 9 are the most vulnerable. 52% of child ID fraud victims in the last 6 years were between the ages of 0 and 9. What's the best age to start educating kids about safe online behaviors?
Well, yeah, this is great because it ties back with what, you know, Ben was saying. Really, the earlier we start educating children about safe online behaviors, the dividends we see paid throughout their lifetimes, right? I would have assumed that age 3 would have been a little bit too young, but to be quite honest, based on some of the research that we did last year, and I'm just in the process now of going through the survey data for this year's report, which we'll publish at the end of October. But it looks like, you know, that 3 to 5 year age range is really the age that makes the most sense. And if you step back and think about it, every child, by the time they're 2 or 3, has a tablet or is on their parents' phone. And so it makes sense that you would start educating those children early. And what I'd really like to see, and I'm sure that Ben, you know, will echo, you know, my favor of this as well, is we'd really like to see early childhood education playing a role here, right? This being part of the curriculum or part of what children are taught, because technology spans outside the household, right? So it's something that everyone needs to be on board with from an educational standpoint.
Yeah, to follow on with that, Tracy, you know, the reason why we started targeting 3-year-olds is for the fact that, you know, if you can teach a child something before they're 5, it basically becomes ingrained so they don't actually have to think about it in the future. So as an example, that's why we teach kids to say please and thank you before they can talk. So once they actually start talking, they are polite human beings. And now, like if you think as an adult, you don't actually have to think, am I supposed to say please right now? Am I supposed to say thank you right now? It just happens, right? Because that's kind of how you were brought up. That's how you were educated and you were taught that early. And there's a lot of other life lessons that you can put into that bucket. And so early childhood educators really know the importance of teaching kids skills that will last a lifetime. And so what we've done at Savvy Cyber Kids, we've created this children's picture book series and we've created free lesson plans and activity sheets to make it really, really easy on preschool educators, on pre-K educators, on kindergarten educators, on first grade educators to actually use our materials. We even have digital free versions of our Savvy Cyber Kids at Home book series on our website. So it literally doesn't cost an educator anything to use our materials in the classroom. And so, you know, the more we can spread and share this information that we have this material available, the more we can do to lessen the impact of child fraud and identity theft over a child's lifetime.
Yeah, that's a great point, Ben. And it's, you know, one of the things too at Javelin, I mean, historically, most of the reports we've written have just been focused on financial institutions. But this particular report, for the reasons you've mentioned, we've made completely public. And we'd like to try to work, you know, more collaboratively with educators too, because I think parents and educators alike would be really shocked to see some of the data, right? And to know how prevalent the risks are for children.
Yeah, and I commend Javelin for making this public. The more information we can get out there in front of parents, the better off we'll all be.
So Tracy, criminals most often target non-financial accounts when they're compromising a child's identity. Curious if you can unpack some data and talk to us a little bit about the types of accounts that criminals target and share some of those insights.
Yeah, so just to kind of fall in line with some of what Ben and I have been talking about here, the way we define personally identifiable information has evolved over the years. So we used to just think historically of DOBs, dates of birth, social security numbers, even physical mailing addresses as being personally identifiable information. But today we deem or we define personally identifiable information much more broadly. So an email address with a password. So having that login credential along with the email address is really considered PII because someone who steals that information could use that to open up a new account, especially if they couple it with some other bits of information such as a mobile phone number. So you could see how easy it would be for a criminal to socially engineer a child into providing an email address, a mobile phone number, and then even access to a social media account. And there you go, the keys to the kingdom to perpetuate new account fraud. But just to give out some stats, as you asked for, Ryan, we see that the number one type of account that cyber criminals like to target target is social media. So Instagram accounts, TikTok accounts, Facebook accounts, right? So this would be where they actually take over the social media account, or they would spoof the account in some way, which I know that all of us have seen that, right? Our account is some way duplicated, and then, you know, requests or messages are going out to our friends lists. The second most likely account to be taken over is an email account. And then that's followed closely by mobile phone accounts. So it's not just a bank account that these cyber criminals are targeting. They're targeting non-financial accounts because these are accounts that they can use to compromise a child's identity and sell on the dark web. So it really is quite concerning. And, you know, Ben, I'd ask you just to chime in here a bit. We do find for this reason that dark web monitoring is something that we really hold to a high standard for identity protection services. And it's something that we're also talking to financial institutions about in some of the identity protection services they provide. But we do find that consumers don't deem dark web monitoring to be that important. But I think if they were to see these statistics where they see social media accounts, email accounts, and mobile phone numbers being the most targeted by cyber criminals, that would change their minds.
Yeah, the more information that we can put in front of parents about what's really happening to their accounts, as well as what's really happening to the data of their children's accounts, the better. One of the things that we should be talking to our kids about, and an adult should be well aware of this as well, is that all of our passwords, all of our email address and password combinations to log into our accounts should be thought about as actually public information. And I know that sounds strange, but this is why. There's been so many breaches of corporations over the decades that have exposed the email address and password combinations that all of our prior password and email combinations to log into systems is known. That information is on the dark web. That information is actually on the regular web if you know where to go look for it. And that's why it is so important to make sure that all of us, parents, kids, are not reusing passwords across different sites, because that's how account takeover happens. That's the easiest way it happens. Someone literally just searches for that user ID or that email address, and it finds all the passwords that have been used in the past because there's been breaches at other companies, and they try it. Oh, by the way, it's automated. So it's not actually a human that's doing this. I mean, there are humans that actually do this too, but this can be automated. And so when you find out, when you get that breach notification letter from, you know, a banking institution or a social media company or an email provider or any type of service provider where you've ever created an account, that's your trigger to go and change that specific user ID and password combination. But when you do that, you don't have to change all the other ones because you're not using the same user ID and password combination over and over again. So really important to do that. And we actually created a tools page on the SavvyCyberKids.org website that has some recommended products. And one of those categories where we recommend product is in a password manager, a password manager that's easy to use, that can be shared across family members so that you don't actually have to worry about the reuse and account takeover from that perspective.
Yeah, that's a great point, Ben. And we recommend password managers as well. So yeah, I'm glad that we're on the same page there. Very important.
Really cool. Well, Tracy and Ben, thank you so much for joining us today to share your insights on an incredibly important topic. Certainly one that I anticipate we're going to be hearing a lot more of in the future as folks like you evangelize and popularize the need to protect children against ID theft.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. Thanks, Ben. I've really enjoyed it.
Yep, enjoyed the discussion. Thanks for having me.